And we will move on to the eighth case of this morning, which is Robinson against Bayer Healthcare. Mr. Grimes.
Good morning. Thank you. The question of similarly situated is a question for the jury. And looking at the district court opinion, the district court said, arguably, Robinson was not given a second chance to provide urine. He was deprived of the opportunity to prove his innocence. And that's at page 12 of the district court decision. In addition, the district court at page 11 said, Lucella may have been a similarly situated employee. Our position is that Lucella, Robinson, and Ward were similarly situated. Our position is that a rational fact finder could find them to be similarly situated. Number one, they were all being dealt with under the alcohol testing policy. That was the standard by which determinations are made, including whether either any of them were at work under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
So, I mean, I guess I'm not sure that you're right that similarly situated is always a question for the jury. It really depends. But the assertion is that Mr. Cusella was cooperative with the test, asks for more time, asks for a drink, and so on. And Mr. Ward is actually fired, but he's rehired when he agrees to seek counseling, whereas Mr. Robinson is not displaying cooperation in either of those respects. He just flat out refuses to do it, and then he never does actually concede that he has a problem.
Well, Mr. Robinson, it wasn't Mr. Robinson's job or responsibility to prove that he had a problem when it was his position he didn't have a problem. And on the question of what the problem was, Engelbrecht wasn't talking about alcohol. She was talking about he wouldn't admit to a problem. What problem? And our position is that the problem that she was referring to arose out of the alleged relationship between Robinson and Holt.
But now we're changing the subject. It'd be helpful to just stay on one thing. Cusell and Ward have nothing to do with that. But in terms of the drug test, which is, as you would agree, the immediate cause of his termination, there are differences.
Yes.
Between the way Cusella handles it and Mr. Robinson, and there are differences between the way Mr. Ward handles it and Mr. Robinson.
Well,
and the question is, could an employer take those differences into account? Because, in a sense, we're not here at this stage trying to figure out, quote, what really happens. We're trying to figure out, is there enough to go forward on a case to show that the employer was engaged in prohibited discrimination?
I'm trying to respond to that. I think that the issue has been raised as to whether there are any comparators to the plaintiff that make Cusella or Ward similarly situated to the plaintiff. And so I'm trying.
And are they valid comparators, or is there enough that's different so that a rational employer who isn't otherwise discriminating on any basis might say, I mean, if you imagine, let's take an extreme case, not the facts of this case. Imagine one employee is asked to go do a urine test, and the person cooperatively goes in there, they do the urine test, they give the sample, they're done. And now somebody else, a different employee, A is cooperative, B goes in there, and B comes out 2 seconds later or a minute later and says, I can't do this. And I don't see any point in this at all. Well, the employer is going to treat those two people differently. And so whether that model fits what we have or not is another question, but an employer could treat those differently. They wouldn't be similarly situated for purposes of that test.
I think we have a different situation here. Because if we look at the case law and we follow all of the material respect aspect of similarly situated, then we find that they are here. Now, when you go to the area that you have discussed, yes, there are differences, and there are material issues of fact as to those differences. For example, Usella, he had been talked to in a meeting with Engelbrecht and Beal, her supervisor, about his situation of being suspected of using marijuana on his breaks. He was suspended and came back the next day. He was sent home by his supervisor. He came back the next day and met with Beal and Engelbrecht. At that meeting, they determined that he should go for testing. He went for testing. In Robinson's situation, Engelbrecht told Keeler, who was Robinson's shift supervisor for that day, that she smelled alcohol on Robinson. She then instructed Keeler to go back to Robinson's workplace, pull him off of his job, and take him up front, according to Keeler. Keeler never told Robinson why he was being taken up front. He did tell Robinson that someone smelled alcohol on him. He didn't even tell him who smelled alcohol on it. So Robinson follows Keeler, and we've outlined this in our brief. He follows Keeler. Keeler outdistances him. He outpaces him. Robinson is trying to find out who said I smell alcohol on me.
But doesn't Beyer have the right to have any employee tested when there's, I mean, I'm not even sure if there's a reasonable suspicion standard in this CBA. So why isn't the relevant difference? Kusela is told you've got to be tested, and he cooperates. Robinson's told you've got to be tested, and he doesn't.
Well, he does cooperate. He does the same thing that Kusela does. He signs the consent to be tested. Kusela signed the consent to be tested. Robinson was given a cup. Kusela was given a cup. Kusela couldn't provide a urine sample initially. Robinson was given a cup to collect a urine sample. Robinson couldn't provide a urine sample initially. Kusela was given up to 2 hours after he arrived at the nurse's station to give a urine sample.
But Robinson didn't ask for that, did he?
No, he didn't. No, Robinson didn't ask for it. There's a reason for it. Robinson was fired on the spot when he came out without pee in the cup. Kusela, when he said, look, I can't go right now, says, okay, we'll wait. You want some water? So ultimately, 2 hours later, Kusela gave a urine sample. Robinson, when he came out after initially trying, he was fired on the spot. So there, when we talk about the performance and the expectation, both of them did the same thing. One was given time and the other one was fired. So the only, we talk about distinguishing or mitigating factors. The other issues that the court raised as to whether those were distinguishing or mitigating, in my view, in our view, they're not relevant. In our view, the distinguishing factor is on these facts, is that Kusela was white and Robinson was black. The mitigating factors are in favor of Kusela and Ward. They were both white. Robinson got nothing. He was the one that was the bad guy. He had done all these things. Keeler didn't tell Robinson why he was going up front. Robinson didn't know anything about this process. And neither did Kusela. Kusela initially resisted as well. He says, well, I thought that that was for guys that were being hired, that they had to go for this testing. The union steward that represented Robinson had never heard of this practice. That particular practice under Supplement 4 had never been advertised in the plant. They had never sent letters that they had in other cases of changes in the rules. So we believe that a reasonable jury can infer that Robinson, Cusella, and Ward were similarly situated. I reserve.
Okay, I'll probably give you one more minute, although your time has expired, but we'll hear from Mr. Kramer and we'll take it as we can. Good afternoon, Mr. Kramer.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Mike Kramer. I represent the defendant, Appellee Bayer. And I assure the Court, I'm not either of the Mr. Kramers that you're looking for.
Yeah, the spelling seemed to change.
Members of the Court, this is a simple case. It's a one-count race discrimination case. And Jimmy Robinson was fired because he failed to submit to Bayer's alcohol testing procedure. That was a procedure that was negotiated by Mr. Robinson's union, the United Steelworkers, and applied evenly to all employees who were suspected of being under the influence of alcohol at work. So we ask you to affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment.
So what's your response to Mr. Grimes' point that, at least vis-a-vis Cusella, Mr. Robinson recounts that when he experiences this difficulty, Engelbrecht says, you can't pee, you're discharged?
Well, Your Honor,
why can't he interpret that as being fired on the spot for a relatively trivial physical issue?
The district court actually, even though there's a dispute, and Engelbrecht says she didn't fire him on the spot, the district court actually credited Robinson's version of the facts.
Quite appropriately.
And found that, you know, that didn't have anything to do with the reasons for the termination. Mr. Robinson has not put forth any evidence that suggests that Ms. Engelbrecht didn't believe that he was insubordinately refusing to submit to the alcohol testing procedure. There's one significant thing that is the same about Cusella and Robinson, and that's Cusella was fired too. He just later, through the grievance process, was given a last chance agreement and came back to work. Very similar to the very recent Luster versus Illinois Department of Corrections case that Judge Hamilton was on, where the court specifically said the fact that the comparator ultimately remained employed does not distinguish him as being treated more favorably. Furthermore, as the district court correctly pointed out, there were more differences between Robinson and Cusella than similarities. Robinson was being tested for alcohol, Cusella for marijuana. There's a different testing process. Robinson apparently attempted to submit to testing, but when he did that, he had already showed that he didn't want to participate and cooperate. He had clocked out and left the plant without permission during his shift. Cusella did nothing like that. Cusella specifically, as Your Honor pointed out, Cusella specifically asked for more time, and he was then given more time. Mr. Robinson did not ask for more time.
But if Mr. Robinson had been just told, you can't pay your discharge, might he not have thought that was a futile gesture?
Well, what's undisputed, Your Honor, he may have. I don't know, but that doesn't mean that they treated him any differently. Had he asked at that point, there's no evidence to suggest that he wouldn't have been given more time. And, in fact, there's ample evidence that they did give him more time. What's undisputed is that after he comes out and says, I can't pee, a taxi cab was called, and both Ms. Engelbrecht and Mr. Robinson's own union steward told him to get in the taxi cab and go to the off-site testing facility where he could give both a urine test and a breathalyzer test. And that certainly would have given him more time. So yeah, I think that the evidence is pretty clear that he was, in effect, given more time. He had a number of opportunities where he could have saved his job, and he didn't do so. And that's what distinguishes him from Cusella, and for that matter, Ward, who was also fired and later got his job back on a last chance agreement through the grievance process.
And what's a person supposed to do if they're in Mr. Robinson's position and they believe that they don't, for example, have an alcohol problem. There's some hint in this record that he was under the influence of some medication that he was taking. Who knows? I mean, I don't really know. But if a person doesn't think they have an alcohol problem, maybe they're a teetotaler and they've been taking medication, can they be forced to say to the company, yes, I have an alcohol problem, just to save their job?
Well, we never got there in this case, Your Honor, because Mr. Robinson didn't say that. What's clear is that in cases where employees, through the grievance process, agreed, as provided in the collective bargaining agreement, to take part in the company's employee assistance program, they got last chance agreements. And that was true for African-American employees as well.
But what if you didn't think you needed a last, you know, in other words, what if it was really just a big misunderstanding about the medication?
Well,
should you have to be in the employee assistance plan?
Your Honor, I suppose we could argue whether you should have to be in the employee assistance plan under those circumstances or not, but that's not what this case is about. The case is about whether there's any evidence that Bayer treated him differently based on his race, and there's no such evidence. Ms. Engelbrecht specifically gave last chance agreements to two African-American employees who participated in the EAP program under the grievance process. Whether it's fair to request that of somebody or not, who knows? We could differ, we could agree on that, but that's not anything to do with race discrimination. And what's clear here is, as far as race discrimination goes, in the decision to terminate Mr. Robinson's employment, he can't make out a prima facie case because, A, he wasn't meeting Bayer's legitimate expectations that day when he was refusing to cooperate in the process, when he was talking inappropriately to the HR manager, et cetera, and, B, he hasn't pointed to a comparator who was similarly situated to him and who was treated better than him. Additionally, he makes no effort, either at the summary judgment phase or at the appellate phase before the court this morning, to show that Bayer's stated reason was a pretext for discrimination, and there's no evidence that it was. So even if it wasn't fair to say, you need to say you have a problem and participate in the EAP program, there's no evidence whatsoever that suggests, I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with whether Teresa Engelbrecht thought, rightly or wrongly, that he was under the influence of alcohol and was refusing to cooperate and participate in the collectively bargained process for testing. And the one other point I would make on that is that Mr. Robinson himself said that the medication he was on could lead one to believe that he was under the influence of alcohol. So that actually supports Bayer's position that Ms. Engelbrecht legitimately thought, perceived that he might be under the influence of alcohol and therefore should submit to the testing procedure.
The district court noted that the plaintiff was tested by the police after he left the premises.
Correct, Your Honor.
And blew a 0.24%.
Yes, that
was. Is there any dispute about that fact?
Your Honor, as I recall the record, the 0.24 was observed by the union steward and mentioned. I don't think that that had anything to do with the court's decision in this case. That was in the parking lot.
I'm just trying to understand how much there was behind the medication theory.
Well, one could certainly conclude that if you blow a 0.24 showing that you have that much alcohol in your system, which is well over the legal limit, it's probably not medication, it's probably alcohol. Again, though, Your Honor, what really matters is the company's perception here and the company's understanding that Mr. Robinson was refusing to participate and cooperate in the testing procedure that was collectively bargained by his union and that was applied evenly to everybody who was suspected of alcohol use. So the key facts, members of the court, are not in dispute at all. And as I mentioned, Mr. Robinson is proceeding under the McDonnell-Douglas indirect method of proof here. He can't make out a prima facie case, and there's no evidence of pretext, nor has he tried to put any forth. For all of these reasons, we urge the court to uphold the district court's grant of summary judgment in this case. If there are no further questions, that's what I have for you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I will give you, if you will be very strict, one more minute, Mr. Grimes.
Robinson was not fired for insubordination. Mayer says that they fired Robinson because he refused to participate in the alcohol testing. Robinson, like Cusella, signed the consent. Robinson, like Cusella, got a cup to pee in. Robinson went into the washroom and tried to urinate in the cup. Cusella couldn't. He had to wait 2 hours to do it. So this notion that Robinson refused to submit, and that's Bayer's words, not mine, that he refused to submit. What do you call that? What do you call all of the steps that Robinson took to do what he was asked to do? Robinson agreed to be tested not only for alcohol, but for drugs, under a policy that says if it's alcohol, you either treat for urine or breathalyzer. We all know that you test for alcohol by breathalyzer. And on the point of pretext, all of the evidence demonstrates that the entire thought that Robinson refused to submit is a pretext, and it's not worthy of belief.
All right. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement.